The U.S. presidential campaign has turned serious. Barack Obama has started to do his own tweeting on Twitter. His aides did it for him in the past. But how will we know it's really him? He'll sign it, B.O. I don't know what that means where you are, but you wouldn't want to be downwind of B.O. over here. There's always been a nasty whiff surrounding the Afghan government, the odour of corruption. President Hamid Karzai confirmed a few days ago that his government and the U.S. have been talking to the Taliban. He also claims that his security forces can cope with the announced drawdown of U.S. troops. There will be 33,000 fewer troops in the country by the time of the U.S. election next November. It's a political move by Obama now that the majority of the country is against the war. But despite what Karzai believes, Obama's top military men say it's a strategy fraught with risks. Stay with me for all this and much, much more. I promise you, it's the real deal.
Oh, just the way you move. It's a real deal. And the way you groove. Oh, it's the way I feel, yeah, yeah. You're a wild thing and you're a natural star. Got me crazy about the way you are. So I'm a deal. Baby, you're the real.
Welcome to The Real Deal with me, George Galloway, every week here at this time on Press TV in central London, bringing you the news and views you just won't find in the corporate media. Shooting from the hip and shooting from the lip, as always, but you could fire back at me, at least by email, to realdeal@presstv.co.uk. I was looking through our back pages earlier at some of the historical events which happened on this day in the past, and I was struck by one particular event, the arrest of the then Member of Parliament for Mid-Ulster in the north of Ireland. She was then called Bernadette Devlin, a 23-year-old nationalist firebrand fighting for a united Ireland. The Troubles, as they were then called, hadn't long started in the north of the country. Bernadette, who married and became a MacAliskey, was later shot with her husband in their remote farmhouse. Fortunately, though, both survived. The Troubles were supposed to have ended years ago, with the IRA hanging up the Armalite and the loyalist paramilitaries also putting their weapons beyond use. But it's not quite so. During last week, the Catholic enclave of Short Strand has been under attack by members of the UVF, the Ulster Volunteer Force, one of the groups which signed up to the peace deal. Catholic homes were attacked by masked men wielding bricks, fireworks and smoke bombs, which quickly escalated into firebombs, attacks on the police and finally gunfire. The Short Strand, like around 30 other areas of Belfast, barricaded behind so-called peace lines, was supposed to be safe. It's the loyalist marching season in Northern Ireland, which peaks on July 12th, when the Orange Order commemorates the Battle of the Boyne, which occurred a mere 321 years ago. I predict more trouble, and not just in the Short Strand. As I said in the introduction, President Obama has started tweeting for himself. He's the world record holder on Twitter, with more than 8 million followers. How many knew it wasn't actually him who was tweeting? Who knows? But he used more traditional media when he announced the start of the U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Starting next month, we will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year, and we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer, fully recovering the surge I announced at West Point. After this initial reduction, our troops will continue coming home at a steady pace as Afghan security forces move into the lead. Our mission will change from combat to support. By 2014, this process of transition will be complete, and the Afghan people will be responsible for their own security.
President Obama was speaking after 10 years of this Afghan war, a war which has lasted longer than the two world wars combined. This reduction was clearly an election tactic. Americans are soured on the war and the economy. Many members of Congress are pushing him to get troops home even faster. And his Republican presidential rivals are taking withering pot shots at his leadership at every chance. And they're having some effect. Obama has said that all American forces will be out of the country by the end of 2014. And it doesn't hinder the campaign to help that along a bit, does it? But it didn't find favour with his military chiefs. It was almost sedition, really. And it's not unexpected, of course, because these military chiefs are in the business of warfare. There's no wars, they're out of business. America's most senior commander, Admiral Mike Mullen, described the troop withdrawals that his boss had ordered as risky, giving evidence before the Senate's Armed Services Committee the day after the commander-in-chief's decision. Mullen, rather indisciplinedly, said the withdrawal was bigger than he had originally been prepared to back. Mullen is chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top warmonger in the top war state. He went on to add that the reductions were, and I quote, more aggressive and incur more risk than he considered prudent. But it's now ballots, more than bullets, that President Obama is interested in. Hamid Karzai reckons that after 10 years of training and countless billions of dollars, his military will now be able to cope in the vacuum. It's in the field that they may have problems. Not that they will have to, in my view, because by the end of 2014, surely some kind of deal will have been negotiated with the Taliban, and Afghanistan will look like, well, just as it was more than 10 years ago, but with hundreds more graveyards. Only in America, a 7-year-old boy, barefoot and in pajamas, drove a car for 20 miles, 32 kilometers, at high speeds before finally being stopped by police north of Detroit on Monday. The boy told police that he just wanted to go to his father's house. Scarily, he nearly made it. The tennis event of the season is going on just a long swerve away from here, actually, at Wimbledon, where a Brit hasn't won in over 70 years. But if you're getting smug across the Atlantic in America, don't, because you don't even have a man in the top 10. Traditionally, at Wimbledon, the ladies wear flouncy hats and the better off eat strawberries and cream. The supermarket giant Tesco is trying to cash in on the event with its own commemorative sandwich. It's strawberries and cream between two slices of bread, and it weighs in at a belt-expanding 435 calories. Will it catch on? What do you think? Sufferers from type 2 diabetes may be cheered by a research project which seems to show that the previously incurable ailment can in fact be cured by severe dieting. The research was carried out at Newcastle University in the north of England. Volunteers had to slash their food intake drastically for 2 months, and by the third month, around 70% of them were clear of the diabetes. The intake, though, was just 600 calories a day, or a Wimbledon sandwich and a half. The Greek Prime Minister, George Papandreou, survived a crucial confidence vote early on Wednesday, keeping alive a government which claims it is dedicated to averting the debt default that could spark a financial maelstrom around the world, even a meltdown. Greek MPs voted along party lines just to back Papandreou by 10 votes. He now faces another critical vote next week on a massive austerity package that Greece's international creditors have said must pass by the end of June. Despite the vote, Papandreou has to still convince all of his Socialist Party to support an austerity bill, which has provoked huge strikes, riots, and a dramatic slump in his popularity. Whilst all 155 Socialists voted in favour in the confidence motion, several have publicly criticised the austerity measures, and at least one has said he will not back them. Following that, European leaders agreed to launch a fresh bailout of Greece, subject to the parliamentary passage of the austerity package next week. Britain, though, is spared from taking part in the rescue after leaders accepted Prime Minister David Cameron's argument that the bailout, expected to total up to €120 billion, that's £107 billion, or getting on for $200 billion, that it should be borne by the other 16 countries using the single currency. Britain, of course, refused to join the euro, thanks to the much-reviled then-Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown. Thanks, Gordon. I'll be hooking up with Greece shortly to follow this up, but first, we caught up with the group of Palestinian schoolchildren visiting Britain, some of whom had been Israel's child prisoners.
I'm Nandita Dawson from Camden Aberdeen Friendship Association, which is an organisation that tries to promote human rights and respect for international humanitarian law particularly by making human-to-human links between Camden in London and Abu Dis in Palestine. And we do a lot of different things, but one of them is that we organise visits to get people to know their counterparts in Palestine. And this is the sixth youth visit that we've organised. We've had a youth visit each summer for the last, well, it'll be 5-6 years. This is the sixth one. And we've brought 14 people, including 10 kids here, and they've met up with an equal sized group of people from Camden. So the kids are doing all sorts of things together. They're doing an environment project, visiting schools, visiting London, and learning about London and learning about Palestine. And the Palestinian kids, are very pleased to be able to talk about their own experience in Palestine. It's very important to be able to see that there are people in the outside world who care, but they're also managing to help create a bigger and bigger pool of people who are interested and care about what is happening in Palestine and want to change what's happening there. And the children that they meet in Camden are, first of all, the people in their group are affected really profoundly by it. I mean, initially, they just think they're meeting somebody from another place. Usually, we've got kids who just don't know anything about it at the beginning. Then they're incredibly shocked. And by this stage, which is halfway through the week, they're really taking it on as something that matters to them. And they're all clamoring to be able to go to Palestine now. But the kids that they meet in their group are not the only kids that they affect, because we take them into schools. And this morning, for example, the group divided into two, and one group went into a school in Tower Hamlets and another went into a school in London, where they did an assembly where the English kids and the Palestinian kids were talking about Palestine, about the issue of refugees, because it's refugee week now, and about life in Palestine now. It's an important part of what we do that the English kids, as I say, take it on and try to explain to their friends what they're learning from the Palestinian kids. And then they went into different classes, so they were paired. They had a Palestinian and a British kid and an interpreter. What that means is that you have, in this case, 8 different classes where British kids are being taught about Palestine by a Palestinian child. It's very powerful.
انبسطت كثير بمعرفتهم وغيرت جو انه نفسيتي صارت احسن من اول.
I was happy to be with the people here and to know them, and also it was good for myself and how I feel after coming from outside the siege.
والمشروع هذا انه ممكن امل كبير انه ينجح ان شاء الله.
And he hopes that this project will be a successful one.
ويحقق أحلام كثير عالم وناس من فلسطين.
And in general, they have people in Palestine have big hope about people who are supporting us from all over the world.
Our aim as an organisation is to promote human rights, and we hope that if you're talking about our aim for the future, it would be that there's a world, including Palestine, where human beings are treating each other and able to be treated properly. I mean, at the moment, these kids, as you know, are living in a situation of constant violation of human rights, where they've got an occupation governing their lives, a military camp in the middle of their town, a wall cutting them off from the centre of the city that they were born in. They've got friends in their classes, if not themselves, with experience of child imprisonment. I mean, it's a horrendous situation. So what do I hope is going to happen in the future? I hope people are free.
What a great story, great association, great kids. Now, the first hurdle may have been cleared by the Greek government, but there's a yawning chasm looming. Not so much the massive hole in the country's budget, but the reaction of the Greek people to these unprecedented austerity demands. Absolutely everything is to be privatized. Wages and benefits will be savagely cut. Unemployment will rocket still higher. Greece can't pay its loans as it is. So why heap on more debt which will only stop the bankers and financiers losing out. On the line now is an old friend of mine, Thanasis Kambayanis, who is a Greek lawyer and political activist. Thanasis, welcome to The Real Deal, my friend. First of all, a double-barreled question. Will the Greek parliament pass this austerity bill? And if they do, will the Greek people accept it anyway?
Well, in terms of whether they will get the votes, the latest news is that two MPs of the governing party said that they will not vote for the austerity measures. So this leaves the majority of PASOK in 153 out of 300 MPs. So this is very volatile. Now, in terms of the people, the polls show that 75% of the people are against the new austerity measures. We will have a 48-hour all-out strike, private and public sector workers strike, next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, that the parliament is going to vote the new austerity measures. There's the occupation of the main square of Athens, of Sindagma Square, by the indignant, which is a movement which is inspired by the demonstrations in Spain and in Egypt in particular. So I really don't know whether they will be able to pass these new austerity measures.
Now, these strikes and occupations and demonstrations, are they getting bigger? Are they staying the same? Are they dwindling a little?
No, they're not dwindling. George, right now that I'm speaking, in the biggest part of Athens, there's no power. The power is down because the electricity workers are having rolling 48-hour strikes. So it's definitely not getting smaller. It's getting bigger and bigger. More people will be in the streets, and more people will strike next week. And these have political consequences. So I really don't know if the government will be able to survive next week's vote.
What would happen, Thanasis, if the 153 PASOK votes became 149 and the vote was lost? What would the consequences of that be, first of all, in Greek politics, and then we'll talk about in the international financial world?
Well, politically, they will be able to create a majority because probably the far-right party will vote in favor of the austerity measures. But this is very embarrassing for a party which is social democratic. It's something like Labour in England.
So they would be depending on the Conservative Party's votes?
The Conservative Party, because it had ruled 5 years before, 5 years ago, it's really unpopular and it cannot vote, it cannot give a yes vote right now. Because the austerity measures, you need to understand how deeply unpopular they are. So there will be a big problem because the government says that there are no money to pay salaries, to pay pensions. And the money stops mid-July, 15th of July. So this poses a very, very big problem on what happens next.
But the Prime Minister offered to resign just a week or 10 days ago. He's still there. Is he still going to be there next week, the week after?
He offered to resign, but actually what the truth is that there's no one who wants the job. Because he was really, it's true what you say, he was willing to give his place to someone else if there was a national unity government. But there's not national unity in the streets. There is unity against the austerity measures now, because the unemployment has climbed at 17%. Everything will be privatized. Profitable enterprises of the state, like electricity, like water, like transport, will be privatized. So there's no unity, and this is why no one wants a job.
Well, you're a prominent activist, a lawyer, a thinking man. What's your alternative? What are you and your friends projecting as an alternative strategy for Greece to get out of this mess?
Look, George, if we are just pragmatic and realistic about what will happen, is that Greece is not able to avoid some kind of default. If you want, I can give you two quick numbers. Every year, the Greek state gets 55 billion euros. out of these 55 billion euros, they have to pay 13 billion, not for the loans, but just for the interests of the loans. So you understand that this is not really sustainable. The only logical solution is that the Greek state should default on its debt. This is the first thing that it
would And what do. Would be the what would be the consequences of that, Thanasis, defaulting?
The consequences, first of all, we need to understand that the money that are given now from the European Union and the European Central Bank to Greece are not money to bail out Greece. It's money to bail out the banks. So the big thing is that there is a bond expiring mid-July. It's eight billion bonds. So this is why they need to give 12 billion to Greece. It's not for Greece to pay salaries. It's not for Greece to pay pensions. It's for Greece to pay a bond. They don't want to give the money to the bank immediately, directly, and they give it to Greece, and then Greece gives it to the banks. So this is how the circuit, the system works. What I say is that we should break this system. We should default on the debt and say that we should prefer paying pensions, paying salaries, than paying the bonds of the banks.
Of course, nobody would ever lend Greece money again in those circumstances, would they?
Well, George, this is not true. Argentina defaulted back in the early 2000s, and Iceland refused to pay the debt of its banks. And it's not actually true that you will be outside of the market forever. Actually, it's the markets that are afraid right now. So I think that you can do things, you can have measures, and this is what I propose and other people propose in Greek society, apart from defaulting on the debt, which is one big thing that you certainly would need to do would be to nationalize the banks. Because there will be a flight of capital. I'm no fool. I understand that rich people will try to get their capital outside of the country, so you will need to nationalize the banks. But banks got really big chunks of money 3 or 4 years ago when they were saved after Lehman Brothers, in the Greek case as well. 30 billion euros were given to the banks. So they're actually nationalized. But we don't have social control, public control on them. So
well, of course, that's something else that we have in common. Just time for a quick prediction then, Thanasis. Is this going to be a really long, hot summer politically for your country?
Oh, it will be really hot. It's 33 degrees C here already in Athens, but it will be hot in political and social terms as well. There is a big wave of unrest, and it's not just in Greece, it's in the whole region. People have had enough paying for a crisis that they have not created.
Well, that's exactly the point, Thanasis. That's exactly the point. The people are revolting because they're being asked to pay for a crisis that they didn't create. That's it, I'm afraid, once more. That's all we've got time for. I've been George Galloway. This has been The Real Deal. You've been a marvelous audience. And I hope I'll see you again next week. It's a real deal.